This regular meeting of the Unalaska City Council is called to order at 6 p.m. Tuesday, October 8, 2024. Council Member Coleman, can you please read the mission statement?
To provide a sustainable quality of life through excellent stewardship of government.
City Clerk, can you please call the roll?
Yes, Mr. Vice Mayor. Mr. Bell, Ms. Coleman,
here.
Mr. Longo, Ms. Luby,
here.
Mr. Nicholson,
here.
Mr. Tungle,
here.
Mr. Tudikoff.
Councilmember Longo, Councilmember Bell, and Mayor Tudikoff are excused. We have a quorum. Council Member Nicholson, can you lead us on the Pledge of Allegiance, please?
To the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Next is recognition of visitors. City Manager, you got anybody?
Thank you, Mr. Vice Mayor. So I know we have Albert Burnham here. He's going to receive an employee anniversary award. And we also have someone here from Net Your Line, and I think she's going to make some comments later.
Welcome. Next is awards and presentation. At this time, we will recognize the 15-year city employment anniversary of Albert Burnham from the Department of Parks, Culture, and Recreation. I would like to call Mr. Roger Blakely from the PCR Director to say a few words.
Thank you, Vice Mayor and Council. Happy to be here today. Ladies and gentlemen, please join me in honoring Albert Burnham on his remarkable 15th anniversary at the City of Unalaska. Albert began his journey in 2009 as a recreation coordinator, and his dedication and talent quickly led to his promotion to recreation manager in 2015. Over the years, Albert has consistently demonstrated exceptional leadership and commitment to enhancing the quality of life in our community. His innovative initiatives, such as the creation of the PCR webpage mobile app, have significantly improved access to our recreation programs and information. In recognition of his outstanding contributions, Albert was awarded the 2023 Rockstar Award. This prestigious honor celebrates his exceptional performance, including his work on the employee newsletter, event photography, and other tasks that go above and beyond his official job duties. Albert, we are deeply grateful for your unwavering dedication and positive impact to our community. As you know, an event like this is what you call poem worthy. So I have created for you an original poem for today's event. It is called Albert Burnham, a Community Gem. In beautiful Unalaska, where the sea meets the sky, Albert Burnham has thrived, letting passions for our community soar high. For 15 years, he has woven his art from our recreation manager. He's played every part. With vision and vigor, he has risen through the ranks. As recreation manager, he has earned our heartfelt thanks. Voted Young Professional from the Alaskan Parks and Recreation Association, he is a beacon of light. His leadership shimmers, guiding us all with delight. In 2019, he graduated from the National Parks and Recreation Association Director's School and is well-trained. Ordained as a minister, His compassion is now unchained. His countless contributions, a tapestry spun from the city newsletter to archery camp, his work is never done. Awarded the Rockstar Award in 2023, celebrating Albert's excellence, being all he can be, Albert is the behind-the-scenes hero. You make the magic unfold. Crafting awards for the Japanese Navy, your heart is as pure as gold. Teaching us all how to navigate wreck track and its flow with understanding of printing, sound, mobile app, the website design, you help us all grow. With every event, you ensure success reigns. Capturing the zen of PCR, turning on two lights as you enter the office, loop hands, leaving hanging a sweatshirt, your passion remains. So here's to you, Albert, our friend, our guide, weaving the fabric of our community. You take so much pride. With gratitude swelling, we honor your grace. In the story of the city of Unalaska, you have carved out your place. Everyone, Albert Burnham. Come on up, Albert.
Give you this, we'll give this to the mayor and for the stand out here. This is exciting. They're going to ask you to say some things too, Albert. Just want you to know. Here, mayor.
Here. That's me. Albert Burnham, the city of Unalaska honors you for your. I'll start all over. Albert Burnham, the city of Unalaska honors you for your 15 years of meritorious service with the city of Unalaska. Your professionalism, knowledge, skills, and dedication have been of exceptional value to the city of Unalaska. Your fellow staff members, Unalaska City Council, and the community, thank you for your 15 years of service to the city of Unalaska. Congratulations.
I better hand that to you now.
Albert, the city gives you a pen that you can have. Thanks, Albert. Thanks for everything.
About a few words.
A few words?
Yeah.
Well, it's been a good 15 years, so I appreciate all my coworkers. Thanks for coming, and thanks, Roger, for putting the poem together, and happy to continue doing what we're doing at PCR to make Unalaska a great place.
Good job. Good job, Albert.
Thank you, Albert. Next is the adoption of agenda. May I have a motion and a second to adopt the agenda?
I make a motion to adopt the agenda.
Second.
Motion made by Councilman Nicholson, seconded by Councilman Coleman. Any objection? Hearing no objection, the agenda is adopted. Next is to approve the minutes of previous meeting. May I have a motion and a second to approve the proposed minutes of the meeting held in September 24, 2024?
I'll move to approve the minutes of September 24, 2024.
Second.
Motion made by Councilman Coleman and seconded by Councilman Nicholson. Any objection? Hearing no objection, the proposed minutes are approved. Next is the city manager report. City manager to introduce.
Thank you, Mr. Vice Mayor. So my report's in your packet where I update you on several items. If you have any questions about those, I'd sure be happy to answer them. I will tell you that number six on that report is a visit from U.S. Representative Mary Peltola. That indeed is going to happen. I just before the meeting got off the phone with some of her staff members, and council members will be invited to a luncheon on the 22nd. Don't have a date and time firm yet, but it'll be approximately noon, I'm thinking, and you'll hear more from that.
Any question with the city manager's report? Council member Luby.
I'm just looking at the staff openings here, and then with the city website, I didn't see a couple of them on the planning. Associate planner isn't on there as a job opening on the city website.
We haven't listed it yet.
Oh, it just hasn't been posted yet. Okay,
correct.
I was just curious. And then now that Patrick Bliss moved to the police department, we don't have the assistant director, ports director on here either.
Also hasn't been posted yet.
Okay. And so I it's not on here either, so I was just curious of if maybe it happened before this. This is a biweekly, so okay. I was just curious. There, you know, can't fill positions if we don't have them. So I was just wondering about that. So thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Other questions? Hearing none, let's move to the community input and announcement. This is the time for the members of the public to provide information to council or to make announcement of interest to the community. Please come to the podium, use the microphone, state your name. Everyone get 3 minutes and council will not engage in a dialogue.
Thank you, Vice Mayor and Council. On Saturday, October 12th, from 7 to 8:30, Unalaska Public Library will be holding our annual mini golf tournament. You need to come and play mini golf, and then you need to win so you can hang the little thing on the refrigerator. And every time your wife walks by, you can say, "That's why I'm the king." Or 2 years ago, she won. She says, "That's why I'm the king." So anyway, come and be part of mini golf. Thanks.
Thank you, Roger.
Okay. Hello, my name is Nicole Baker. I have a company that's called Net Your Problem, and we have been doing recycling of old nets and lines from the fishing and maritime industry since 2017, and I'm in town this week to start a recycling program with the crabbers, so we know that that hasn't been going well for a few years, so this is now their quota is back and the boats are back fishing. So I'm just here for this week, walking around, talking to the guys as they go through the pots and decide if there's any line that they want to keep or get rid of. And the, I guess, thing that they would have to do differently to recycle rather than take stuff to the landfill is have the float line and the sink line put in different super sacks. So the those two kinds of line are made out of different plastics. So right now when they're sorting through the pots and figuring out what they want to do, it all goes in one bag and goes to the landfill. But if we sort it into two bags while they're going through their gear, then we can keep that stuff out of the landfill and send it for recycling. So I will be here until the 14th. If anybody has any questions, I'm happy to take them. I don't know if that is that appropriate at this time to take questions or I don't know or not, but yeah.
is there a number where they can reach you in case?
Sure. Yeah. My number is 359-3450.
Thank you.
Yep. Okay. Thanks very much.
Mr. Vice Mayor, we have Mr. Kelty on Zoom and would like to make a public comment as well.
Go ahead, Frank.
Good evening, Mayor Pro Tem, members of the council. For the record, my name is Frank Kelty. I work for the city manager as the resource analyst. I just wanted to give a quick update on the good news we received last Friday from ADF&G on the crab stocks. Bristol Bay Red King crab allocation is 2.31 million pounds for starting October 15th. I thought it might be a little bit better than 2.3 million, but that fishery still is showing poor recruitment into the fishery, and I think that's probably why ADF&G was very conservative on that stock. But the large males and large males improved. The females were above the threshold amount to keep the fishery open. So it's good that we have that fishery again for 2 years in a row. The Tanner crab really showed a big improvement. Last year, Tanner crab east and west was only like 2.4 million pounds. This year, the total is 6.2 million, 4.5 in the western district of the Bering Sea and 1.77 in the eastern district. And so that's a good shot in the arm. Tanner crab fishery for Baradai showed improvement all across the board in females, pre-recruits, juveniles. So things are starting to improve greatly in the Baradai fishery. I think the ABC allowable biological catch was 72 million pounds total for that fishery. So things are starting to improve. Moving on to the snow crab fishery, this is the first time in 3 years we've had a fishery. We've got tack at 4.7 million pounds this season, and they saw a lot of, on the survey work, they saw a lot of males and a lot of females in good recruitment in staying the small size crab moving into the fishery. So we had some meetings with the ADF&G commissioner and told them that if there was some way that we could have a fishery, it would really help help the people involved with the crab industry. And we got the small 4.7 million, and hopefully things will keep improving. And I just got back from the meetings. I'll have in the report I sent you today, I talked about some of the other things. I got about 30 seconds left. I just mentioned that a hot topic there was the definition of the pelagic trawl gear. And we'll be seeing more about that. They updated some of the language, and but there was a lot of public testimony on what's a midwater trawl and what's a bottom trawl. So that was something that we got to keep on our radar as it progresses. So thank you very much, Mayor Pro Tem and members of the council.
Thank you, Frank. City Clerk, is there other written comments submitted, or does anyone on Zoom or phone wish to speak?
No written comments were submitted, sir, and nobody else indicated they wanted to make a comment.
Thank you. Next is public comment on agenda items. This is the time for the members of the public to provide information to council regarding items on the agenda. They don't want to wait until the item comes up on the regular agenda. To comment later during the regular agenda, you need to sign up with the city clerk. Please come to the podium, use the microphone, and state your name. Everyone gets get 3 minutes, and council will not engage in a dialogue. Does anyone present wish to speak? Public hearing, members of the they testify about any item set for public hearings, and there's a 3 minute time limit. Please come to the podium. The public hearing is now open for ordinance 2024-12, amending the title 15 of the Unalaska City Code of Ordinance to reduce the minimum height for address and numbers on building from 5.25 to 4 inches. Does anyone present wish to speak? City Clerk, were written comment submitted, or does anyone on Zoom or on the phone wish to speak?
No, sir. No submission.
Hearing none, the public hearing is now closed. Next up is the work session. May I have a motion and a second to go into a work session?
I make a motion to go into the work session.
Second.
Motion made by Councilman Nicholson and seconded by Councilman Luby. Any objection? Hearing no objection, we are now in a work session at 6:20 p.m. First is the update from Department of Ports and Harbors. City Manager to introduce.
Thank you, Mr. Vice Mayor. So we've got Peggy McLaughlin, who is our Director of Ports and Harbors, and she's going to give you an update of happenings at the Port of International Port of Dutch Harbor. Turn it over to you, Peggy.
Thank you. Thank you, Mayor Pro Tem and Council. I won't keep this, I'll keep this fairly short tonight, but I really did want to give you, the Council, kind of a broad update of what's been happening in the Department of Ports and Harbors. We've had an incredibly busy year. And we have lots of activity in forward motion. And I think this is an opportunity just to give us a big, broad brush of what we're doing and what we're looking on for future focus. Ms. Carla, I'll have you go back on that. I want to just take note of the cover picture here. This is a host of firsts for the port. You have a cruise ship, a Navy vessel, and a Coast Guard. All of those require Homeland Security and facility security plans and activity on the port. That arrangement on the dock represents approximately 20 hours of port time. Okay, go ahead. So what I hope for you to take away tonight is just to kind of detail some of the major areas of responsibilities that the port covers, what is kind of what our day-to-days look like and how they feed into the bigger picture. I wanted to give Council a really solid update on the port capital and administrative projects, and then talk a little bit about the port's role in economic development and what that looks like with what we're doing today. So the port maintains 2.5 acres of property related to the Tom Matson Terminal Airport and over 17 acres of upland property associated with waterfront properties. We maintain roughly 3 miles of dock face spread over 5 facilities that are roughly 6 miles apart. When fully staffed, our operations are covered by a director, a deputy director, harbor master, 2 billing and scheduling clerks, and 6 harbor officers, and we are a 24/7 operation. We are charged with maintaining all the subsurface utilities with the exception of fuel. So all the 9 mile of electrical conduit that runs under UMC, all the water lines, that falls under our purview. We have all the high mast lights, the fire suppression systems, electrical pedestals and support lighting, safety gear, including ladders and safety rings. Mechanical maintenance on port specific equipment like pumps and the shoreside cranes that operate off of the end of the spit and at the CEM drive down. We have certain functions of maintenance for the tidebreaker. We are required under the Department of Homeland Security to have, maintain, and enforce a facility security plan. And the port houses the 3 executive officers for the facility security plan. We also perform search and rescue with tidebreaker and respond to certain waterside emergencies. We maintain best management practices, which hosts our environmental compliance requirements as approved by various regulatory agencies. So DEC, in some cases EPA, and Fish and Wildlife and Fish and Game. We manage over between the airport and the port, we manage over 40 contracts. For various leases and harbor users. And among other things, we are responsible for proposing rates for Council's approval that are published in our tariff and our fee schedule. And we are charged with implementing an accurate billing for those by the port staff. Our billing scheduling clerks have scheduled and billed over 1,700 individual vessel calls this year. True community outreach is something we've always struggled with because our head is down in operations, but over the last couple of years, we've seen a real trend in Alaska waters with recreational boaters and drownings. And so we have taken a real push to try to bolster the Kids Don't Float program. You may have heard PSAs over KUCP for safe boating practices and equipment and filing a float plan and Kids Don't Float. And we've done those in three or four different languages, depending on who was available. And then we've also partnered with the tribe and with the school for some of our elementary kids to put them through the, you know, how to wear a life jacket, how to choose the right life jacket for you. And so we continue to try to do those kind of outreach programs and hope that we can promote safe boating here in Unalaska. We don't have a maintenance staff. All the work that we've done, with the exception of the DPW maintenance, facility maintenance team who maintain the U.S. Coast Guard Morale Shack and the two permanent buildings at CEM and the airport terminal building, all the maintenance falls on our staff, or you have to contract that out. So that includes all the snow removal, all the major electrical. We've got, you know, so have diving down Airport Beach Road, you've got a light that flickers. We've got the same thing at the light cargo dock, and we don't have an electrician on staff. In fact, I don't think the city has an electrician on staff that is certified to handle that. So we are contracted out. And it basically, it's like the equivalent of a ballast for LED lights, but there's a lead time on the purchasing of that. And there's a qualification to be able to install that. Let's see. The harbor officers do cover 24 hours a day. We have six harbor officers. If we were just to cover with one single person all 7 days a week with 24-hour coverage, we'd need 4.2 people. So we've got that other 1.8 person to cover for additional things like sick leave, vacation, storm events where we double up. And we do this with a very minimal overtime exposure. We've got a really, really committed staff, and they take their training opportunities seriously, and they cover a lot of ground. In the summer, they work primarily on summer maintenance program. In the winter, of course, there's a lot of snow removal and wintertime things that they're responsible for, including double checking ties of boats and those kind of things when we know we've got weather fronts coming, working with boat watchers, all those things. But in order to walk through where we are in order to understand what, let's go ahead and switch to slide four here. In order to understand what we're trying to accomplish with some of our maintenance and our development, we really need to walk through some of the capital projects. The ports, in order to do that, it's best to kind of just give you a broad brush of what the process actually looks like when you're developing, starting a project from start to finish, how council's role comes into play with that and what that means. And then we'll kind of put that layer over a port project so you can see what that translates to. Starts with concept and then a broad cost estimate. And we go through the CMMP process where we nominate that project with consideration to return on investment, long-term maintenance requirements, long-term staffing needs. And then it goes, then we go through the council, it gets approved in the CMMP process. Then we go through the process for choosing an engineer and working on a design process where they further develop a detailed design on varying levels of 25, 35, you know, 60, 90, and 100% design, cost estimates associated with that. It will event, and the permitting starts with that process. So when they're starting that concept design and that beginning engineering piece, the engineers aren't just going, okay, let's, you know, here's a dock, let's build it. They're looking at all the scientific data they need to develop what that looks like. So for Bobby Stores, as example, we had a geotech work done. So they drilled down to bedrock and they did soil samples to understand if we were going to hit contaminants, to understand where the bedrock was, what type of piles we needed and how far we needed to drive them. They looked at, they're currently looking at wave action. They're looking at wind studies just to make sure that the design that they're building is built to the right specifications for the basin they're building in. So that goes through a whole series of modeling and engineering calculations. And so that it progresses, but not necessarily as we'd hoped. They go through the permitting process. There's typically a 6 to 9 month, sometimes longer depending on what permits are required, permitting process. But as you progress through all that, some of these are happening simultaneously. And as you get to that point, then it comes back to council for approval of the design, the final budgeting amount, and we go out for bid for a contractor. That's kind of like a really broad brush with that. But when we start taking a look at these projects, we don't have all of our projects listed up there, but I'm going to go through these that are on there and add to it a little bit. Right now, the port has approximately $102 million in projects in the works. Of those projects, the port has $27,300,000 in grant applications outstanding. And we have secured an additional $40,932,000 in funds or guaranteed matching funds for major port projects. So, pardon me, I'm going to grab this here so I can see it. We look at where we're at with the CEM breakwater repairs. We currently, as of this week, have divers doing inspections on the CEM breakwaters. We've been monitoring them. We did some temporary patches on those, and they held through the last storm. We anticipate they'll hold this next one that's coming up, but we have crews on them this week doing inspection and analysis on it. The vessel demand study, this is something that is in the works. We have not developed the RFP for that. We are still trying to decide what the criteria is. And I think when we start talking about some of the vessel activity we've seen this summer, that's going to take some support from council. We're going to need to understand specifically what the role of the Department of Defense is for future vessel calls into Unalaska. The rate study, this is not under the capital projects. This is done under our operating budget. And that is well underway. We're at a stopping point now until we have the final numbers from FY23 so that we can implement actuals and come up with projections for what we need to do with future rates. Emergency mooring buoy. This has been, we hired a company to do an ROV inspection on it. We have that information and now we're waiting for the final report. We anticipate fully that we're going to need to pull that system. There's been enough indication on some of the footage that, you know, when you have anchor chain and they've got the cross member in it, the wave action has deteriorated that cross member. So we're going to need to pull that system and bolster some of that anchor chain. Because it is an emergency mooring buoy, because it is used and directed, vessels are directed there by the United States Coast Guard. We've been in discussion with them and the Alaska Marine pilots on how best to handle that. And I believe that we will have support from the Coast Guard in accomplishing some of that project, but that is unfunded. And early estimates put that at about $600,000 to $750,000, which is not included in the $102 million projects. The Unalaska Marine Center restroom, that's just a complete embarrassment. We have worked with multiple prefab companies to no avail. We had an offer from one of our customers to build that and sell it back to the port at cost. The city attorney has yet to find a way to make that feasible. We are looking at about a $600,000 bathroom, which just seems ridiculous. But that's where that sits at this point. The emergency cliff face stabilization. We did some initial work on this. As you will recall, the port staff was displaced. Administrative staff was displaced for almost a year. Once we had the major water event in December of 22, going into 23. Port staff was directed out of the building. We maintained our harbor officers in the building because they were out in the field so much. And eventually we're able to move our billing and scheduling clerks back into the building because they're at the front of the building. But all of those of us that were operated in the back of the building continued to be displaced until they got some hand scaling done on that. There's still some significant work that needs to be done on that. And we're working through some estimates right now for the R&M came up with several options for us in terms of some anchoring options and some concrete wall options and some kind of fender options. And so we're working through those right now. Don't have a price tag on that, but that issue still remains. I will remind council, regardless of whether or not the port is in that particular building, that is our property. And we have a tenant that has built a building on that. And so our liability doesn't necessarily go away just because we choose may or may not choose to maintain a port office there. Interstitial dredging. We have regular meetings going on with the Corps of Engineers, and the contractor, the contract has been awarded. And November 14th, they will be here for a full 8-hour presentation and discussion with the community and the stakeholders. That is anticipated to begin, they begin mobilizing in May, and they their completion date is October, I want to say October 25th of 26. 25, excuse me. 25. At the same time, you will recall that we signed a contract with PND this winter, and they hired Bentic to come in and do a bunch of bathymetry work and high-tech soundings and information gathering for the dredging project and the potential dock expansion area in front of the light, UMC and light cargo dock. They gathered a tremendous amount of information, and part of the really critical piece of that, they had a wire. They do a electrical sounding. It's a little bit foreign to me, but they basically lay cable on the seafloor. They have to hold static, and they pump electricity into that, and that bounces the images back. And they had a breach in one of their lines, so they'll be back next the week of the 21st to complete the information gathering that they need. The permitting is in progress. Our goal is to be able to, I think I need to clarify this. At one point, I had a discussion with our federal lobbyist last week when we were working on the Siladang IU information, and he was questioning the Corps' role in the dredging in front of the docks. It's never been our intention to partner with the Corps on that. That's not in their purview. So just to be clear, our goal was to be able to do some cost sharing, and that we would save having to mobilize two companies and piggyback off of permitting that existed for the dredging of the entrance channel. So the goal is to be ready to go with this. So when the dredging of the entrance channel is underway or completed, we can move over and take care of this. There's no sense, remember, in dredging in front of the docks if we can't get over the bar. So once that's done, our goal is to piggyback off that permitting and we'll have to bid it out, but use a contractor hopefully that's already mobilized and have some cost savings in paying mobilization and demobilization twice for dredging. So the permitting's underway. There's kind of been some exciting developments in that. They don't believe that they're going to have to permit a formal dump site. They believe that they'll be able to, if you recall, in front of UMC, we've got about 40 feet of mean lower water, and then it drops off dramatically. And they believe that they'll be able to dredge that material right into that deep kind of ravine just off the side of it, which would mean it's not going to fill back in. So that's all still in the works, but that is the goal with the light cargo and UMC dredging, is to be able to just push that off into deeper water without having to go through, you know, hauling it out to a dump site. Robert Storrs, we have got a couple of great and fun developments on this. We should hear in the next week or two on whether we were successful with the harbor matching grant. We applied for $5 million. In addition, we put in a letter of interest in through one of the, it's being managed by NOAA. Can't remember off the top of my head who the actual grantor is, but there was a grant opportunity for disposing of derelict vessels. And so one of the things when we're going through a capital project and we're planning to do a replacement project, we got to figure out what we're going to do with the boats that are there. And we have at least one significantly problematic vessel, and we have been invited to formally apply. We put a letter of interest in with some documentation and some backing from local stakeholders, including, you know, our OC and the tribe and our UMFA and some of the local long-term key players. And we've been asked to apply for the grant, and that's a $300,000 grant to dispose of some derelict vessels, which will help us out tremendously. The PND took note of the public comment that was made when they were out here. They have taken serious a look at what's been going on with wind. They gathered some video from local local people. They are taking a look at, they're doing some wave modeling with some concerns from some of the 60-foot vessel owners. And so they're hoping to come up with a solid plan and information that states this design, you know, hits the spot. So that's moving forward. They are probably close to the 30% design. I don't know where they're at with permitting. We have met with the landowner for a land swap, and that is moving forward nicely. Both organizations are very motivated to get that sorted out. The planning department has a little bit of work to do with entangling some old tideland leases, but Unicy and the city are both very motivated to get that sorted out. So that's not going to be an issue when it comes to, you know, actual build time. So the big project that's not on here is the UMC resurfacing. And that was a project we put into, it was probably roughly a $42 million project. We put in a $20 million, these are round numbers, $20 million grant application to MARAD with the Port Infrastructure Development Program. And Mattson came up with the match for those grant funds with the purchase of their crane, which is roughly $22 million. We have finalized the lease agreement with Mattson for the Backreach area, and they have purchased their crane. We've been getting requests for information for port logistics and docking and wharfage and all those kind of things that, you know, vessels request when they're coming in. So there's a 2+ year lead time on that, but the crane has been ordered and those wheels are in motion. So we should hear on that grant. I believe it's November 4th is the date that we're targeted to hear on that. So that's through USDOT Maritime Administration Program. So that's really what I had just to go over the capital projects. You can hit the next slide, please. What's our role in economic development? And I think this is a really important discussion because Alaska is a maritime state. We're 33,000 miles of coastline. There's nothing, very little, that comes in and out of this state to our local communities and through our local businesses that are not impacted by the use of ports and harbors. So each project that we undertake, we're not going to have the smoking gun for, you know, the next crab fishery or the next pollock fishery or the next boon. But everything that we do with ports is setting us up, or setting us up to fail if we don't do anything, setting us up for being ready and supporting businesses as it stands today. So we take a look at the dredging of the entrance channel. Prime example, the D7s, the, you know, the old Sealand, the, now it's Mattson, Kodiak, Tacoma, and Anchorage. They were built in 1984, 85, that time frame. They were built in the Great Lakes. They were built to go through the locks there. They're a very small vessel in terms of what they draw and the width of them. And they're timed out. They've served Alaska well. So Mattson is bringing in bigger ships. They needed bigger and more availability for draft. They need to get over a bar that's, you know, not 43 feet. They need to be able to dock in a deep draft port and do a full loadout. And that increases their efficiency. So as we build and set ourselves up for what looks like, you know, future activity, it's about protecting what we have. It's about maintaining what we have. And it's about looking to what is happening in the next 5 years, 10 years, you know. So couple of things that I didn't highlight that I think is important to say. It's the protection piece of that also is like the comments at the Seladang IU that the council weighed in on and looked at. All of that is about us providing avenues for emergency response, for environmentally safe commerce, to protect our fisheries, to protect our shorelines, to protect our waters. If we damage those things, we damage our commerce. So as we look at the broad picture, we're going to build things and we're going to protect things and we're going to maintain things. That's kind of how I see it. The month of July was a pretty fascinating month for us from a business standpoint. We booked the UMC dock at build it at 85% capacity. We had 11 naval vessels for multi-day stays. Year to date, we've had, since July, we've had 11 naval vessels. We've had 18 cruise ships. We still have one more cruise ship to come. If you were to break down what July looked like at that 85% capacity, here's how it ranks. Cargo operations were 51% of the activity. U.S. Coast Guard was 21%. Fishing vessels and associated support vessels were 12%. Navy was just over 7%. Fueling services were 5%. Cruise ships were 2%. So we're open for business, but we're at 85% capacity. And we turned stuff away in July just because of the timing of things and those kind of pieces. So I just wanted to give you a broad brush of, you know, what we're looking at. There are financial opportunities out there. We do need to have some discussions with Department of Defense. We have started those discussions in-house. I've been drafting up information for them on the, you know, the constraints of the UMC, the amenities at UMC, some of the things at like cargo dock, because we are not going to be able to, we're not going to be able to say no to them all the time. We don't want to say no to them, but there's going to come a time where, you know, we've got contracts for fueling, we've got contracts for cargo, we've got contracts for the U.S. Coast Guard, and you're putting 10 pounds in a 5-pound bag. So sometimes we're going to need to start having those conversations about what that looks like for future vessel traffic. The demand study that's in the works will help with that, but we may or may not get the feedback that we need from the Department of Defense. And that's going to, we're going to need to lean on our political, our elected body to be able to have those conversations. Because, you know, we on the port level are on a need to know basis, and some things we just don't need to know according to the Navy. So just put that out there. And so the way, one of the ways that we promote business and commerce is we start partnering. We partner with industries. We don't get to create new business, but we get to partner with businesses that are already in the works, right? We can't compete with private industry. We need to provide support services for private industry. So when we look at that, it's like Matson partnering with them for the crane, their new crane, the infrastructure needed to support that crane, and to developing a long-term lease that secures business for the community. It's partnering with the Department of Defense. It's partnering with cruise ships. And that may not all fall on the city. It may not all fall on the city, but it may be that we are the ones that lay the groundwork and the foundation for how it should work, what it should look like, and we can support other organizations in the community that be able to build things that support some of this new vessel traffic. Anyway, that's just kind of the broad brush of what we're doing. I really wanted you to understand, or at least get from our perspective, what was going on with the capital projects. We've been nose to the grindstone, and we're kind of left out in the end of the community. And so sometimes it's nice to be able to highlight what we're up to. So I don't know if you have any questions, but I'm happy to answer what I can.
Okay, questions the port director, council member Holm.
Thank you. So quickly, going back to your first slide, you had the cruise ship and the Navy and the Coast Guard there. What MARSEC level do you usually have to be at? We have
any... MARSEC level, it doesn't change unless there's some kind of event where the Department of Homeland Security changes it, and it's very rarely changed for one specific port. It might happen in an airport if there's a threat or something like that, but we're at MARSEC level one, unless it's changed.
Okay, so because you were talking about the personnel time, so it's not like you have closed gates, but you have to man all of the entrances, or was it?
So we, the Port Department, in this particular circumstance, did not man anything. We did not provide security. We contract out as much of the security as we can, because we don't have the manpower to provide security during that. What we do is set these vessels, and all three of these vessels are regulated vessels. which means that there's compliance issues involved with all of them. And I can't get too far into the weeds on it, but what I can tell you is that there are protocols that we have to follow with setup for each types of vessels, and dock sweeps and security barriers and some of those kind of things. And then there's just scheduling piece. Right. This doesn't happen with one phone call. This is, you know, multiple days. I'm coming, I'm not coming, I need this time. You know, Coast Guard and Navy are doing this behind the scenes, battling for space, and somebody, you know, a fishing vessel gets kicked to the light cargo. I mean, it's a little bit of a puzzle for a while, but all three of these vessels were regulated vessels, and there's compliance issues with each one of those, which requires a certain amount of security setup. And vigilance, I'll just put it that way.
Right. And then, and so I know you guys can get some big projects going on. I don't really want to get into a lot of the project stuff. Maybe that's going to be a discussion. But thanks for the overview on that. I just have to say, on an unrelated topic, I had to go and look at y'all's BMPs for the ports. And wow, if anybody wants to know how many rules and regulations have to be covered in different agencies and different aspects the ports have to cover, it's pretty mind-boggling. All the things are referencing with the fuels and the, I just, yeah, it goes on with the environmental aspect of it and just the regulatory aspects. That was quite eye-opening.
And eye-glazing.
And eye-glazing. Just a final, I guess, note, the economic development part of it. You can kind of take for granted what we've built and how well it doesn't, you know, if it's functioning well, you kind of just like, oh, yeah, everything's good until things don't go well. I recall just a quick statement that when I was in Ray Hudson's room, I had picked up an old newspaper, and it was before the Dutch War Fishermen, so I don't know how long ago that was, but they had a big council meeting. It was on the front page about the building of UMC and how controversial it was at the time. And I was like, because I wouldn't hear yet, but I was amazed. But they had the vision to build this, and now we're already at capacity. So it kind of makes you think back, because there's a lot of money then, and it'll be a lot of money if we do something else. And look what it's done for us. So, you know, it just takes people in positions to have the vision to be able to look forward. And it just a comment that it was just amazing to look back. Sometimes you can look and learn a lot from past experience and past what was said and how it came through to fruition. It worked out well for us. They don't, all projects don't, but it was really kind of an interesting perspective. Thanks for the presentation.
Other question? Go ahead, Councilmember Luby.
One question I had was about the restroom. What's the problem? Why is it?
So we really had hoped that we would be able to put in an ADA compliant restroom. And when we built when we did the expansion and replacement project for 3 and 4, positions 3 and 4, we stubbed in all the utilities. Council didn't really have the appetite at the time to build that restroom then, but we stubbed all that in, knowing that at some point we were going to have to comply with our own code and put a restroom in. And so, for the record, the Morale Shack at the Coast Guard has one, and the Gang Shack for the ILWU has one at the north and the south ends of the dock. But this would really service, you know, like our cruise ships and our ferries and other dock workers that are, you know, needing a restroom. So that really started the hunt for doing something permanently with the bathroom. And so there's companies out there that do prefab. And they've just virtually been impossible to work with. And so P&D presented one of these companies out there with their presentation with Bobby Storrs, and we had tried to reach out to them. So we tried again to reach out to them, and we're getting nowhere with it. But we had a meeting with the representatives from Sundance, and they were really frustrated with the bathroom situation. They're like, we'll build it and we will, you know, we'll build it to your spec and we'll, you know, we'll sell it back to you. So it's a little bit of the legalities of you know, working through to make sure that we're not crossing lines there with, you know, with our own code and with how that's supposed to work. It's not supposed to be a profit situation. It's supposed to solve a problem. But otherwise, we end up building a bathroom that goes through that capital projects process. It goes through on a very minor scale. It goes through a concept. It goes through a design. It goes through a bid. And it pays Davis Bacon wages to build a bathroom. So now all of a sudden, what is, you know, a basic design, like hose out type restroom, is, you know, pushing $1 million.
So what's the problem with the prefab? I mean, nobody wants to build it, or
we get so far down the design line and then it's just like they just disconnect. We, you know, Mark out at Public Works has worked with that. Scott's worked with it. I've worked with it. I think Bob Cummings worked with it. It's just, we've all been kind of stalemated when it comes to, and there's not just one, there's one kind of leading company that does that. But we even looked at the old ATCO buildings, if there's something we could do with that that would make sense. And that, you know, it's just, it's still kind of a temporary, won't hold up forever type situation. But it really is a, it's really turned into be just kind of a albatross around our neck.
That's really strange.
It is really strange.
And anyway, okay, well, I was curious about that. And then I did, what was I was going to say something more about, it was about the dock and more build it and they will come is, you know, a lot of times, you know, not always, but it has. I mean, if you think about how small that dock was, you know, what, in 90, 91 when it got built?
Yeah.
Originally.
So it's interesting you say that, because one of the notes I had in here that I didn't go through was, I think we're kind of beyond build it and they will come. Dock projects are done in the tens of millions of dollars at this point. And so it's really about having that business connection that's gonna have that return on investment before you build.
Mm-hmm.
That's really the important piece as far as I'm concerned. We did have that with Sealand back in the day. Remember, they entered into the, and they partnered with Ada and Sealand and the city, and that's where we ended up with the dock. But mm-hmm. and Sealand guaranteed the payments for the Ada payment. So we really do need that partner before we start doing massive expense. But some of these projects, you know, for example, the environmental benefit on the dredging piece is now we can bring those fuel tankers in,
mm-hmm.
and we're not, we have the opportunity to not lighter on the hook. So there's this environmental piece that's just that hugely benefits from that. And as we have more vessel demand, like most of the vessels in that picture are fueling.
Mm-hmm.
So not so much the cruise ships, but they're fueling. So there's going to be a higher fuel demand. So we might need bigger capacity and to be able to move fuel into port because we're faster, because we're moving it out of port faster.
Right. Well, and I mean, I would be in support of expanding our port services just because that's what this community, you know, rides on. That's what supports us. And if we could, you know, get a commitment from the military would be great, or, you know, a cruise ship, maybe, you know, get some commitment for, they have been in a lot and, you know, they don't like it when they don't have dock space. So.
And they don't. And I don't like having to have that juggle. It's a nightmare for staff. And it's a nightmare when you have to finally go,
sorry,
if you want to come in, you're going to have to anchor out.
Right.
You know, I mean.
It's, yeah, no, it's something that, you know, maybe there's a head tax on cruise ship to build it.
We do receive a small head tax from the state for cruise ships, but we don't have enough passenger count to really make a dang
make end, a difference.
You know, what will probably end up being a $35 or $40 million project.
Right. Yeah.
Like, I think we get $12,000 or $15,000 a year or something.
Okay. All right. Well, yeah, I'm all for expanding if we need to. And I feel like those businesses have been there. I've watched, you know, I've paid really close attention to and know that a lot of boats just don't get the dock space because, you know, it's full. And it always happens. Everything happens at the same time.
We're not letting up on projects from the standpoint of planning for the future, but we are at a saturation point where with what we have for city staff,
mm-hmm.
Certainly for what we have for port staff, we've got on our plates what we can handle right now. We can do some of the planning and, you know, the prepping for what may be coming down the pike, but it will take that partnership for us to be able to, you know, take the pressure valve off of what we've got in terms of
experience and ability to manage $102 million worth of projects just for the port. That doesn't take into consideration what Public Works has on their plate for all the other capital projects. So,
right, we have a lot going on. So, okay, thank you.
Anyone else? Well, you guys mentioned the Marsic level. You know, Marsic level can only be raised by the captain of the port out of banquets. That's the only time that Marsic level can change. Nobody else can change that unless it comes from the captain of the port out of banquets. And on security, a lot of times, you know, you got vessel officer in there, the VSO, and work with the facility officer where they can segregate everybody. I don't know how much, like those Navy ship government, they got a little bit different, more secure than the rest of the other foreign vessels that we deal with. So I think you guys did a great job segregating a lot of those, you know, putting some barricade, separating, and it's pretty surprising how much space we got in there when they did those. Yeah. But yeah, you guys did a great job accommodate all those vessels. On the dock, we always gonna have this problem. It don't matter what, no matter how many dock we gonna build, because there's a certain time when everybody just showed up. In the pick of the season, you compete with the industries and cruise ship, and now we're getting this the government ship. Back in the days, you know, we want a lot more dock. We see boat piled up, tied up, pipe out from the dock, you know. Back in the 80s, and we see those scrub boats tied up, pipe one after the other,
yeah,
on the face of the dock. It'll be nice to build more, but at the same time, like right now, we got a lot of open dock that we don't have much, you know. There's always a time when we're going to run into this issue where everybody shows up sometimes we just gotta do what we can at the best what we have, but it won't hurt to look forward and start looking for some possibilities for expansion in some way. But at the same time, we gotta maintain what we have and make sure we maintain what we got in here before we start spending a lot more going forward. On the dredging, I've been waiting for that dredging to happen, because that's really needed for this. We know we're gonna end up dealing with a lot bigger ship in the near future in here, and that dredging is really important. And piggybacking with the Corp when they do that to deepen up the face of the dock, both UMC and light cargo will be well worth spending the money on that one, because it's not, if we bring them back, it's going to cost us twice as much for moving and demoving all the equipment they're going to bring in here.
Yeah, I agree. Thank you for that.
Thank you, Peggy. Any other question? Thank you, Peggy.
Thank you for your time.
Now I need to request a motion and a second to return to a regular session.
I make a motion to move into the regular session.
Second.
Motion made by Councilman Nicholson, seconded by Councilman Coleman. Any objection? Hearing no objection, we are back in a regular session at 7:03 p.m. We are now on a regular session. Person wishing to speak on a regular agenda item must sign up with the clerk. 3 minutes time limit per person. First one on the unfinished business. Ordinance 2024-12. Second reading, amending the Title 15 of the Unalaska Code of Ordinance to reduce the minimum heights for the address numbers on the building from 5.25 inches to 4 inches. May I have a motion and a second to adopt Ordinance 2024-12?
Move to adopt Ordinance 2024-12.
Second.
Motion made by Councilman Coleman, seconded by Councilman Luby. City Manager to introduce.
Thank you, Mr. Vice Mayor. So as we discussed at last meeting, this ordinance sets a minimum height for house members at 4 inches from the present 5.25 inches. Request came through the LEPC because they have a grant to provide the numbers and such. So we did talk this through at the last meeting, and we accomplished the public hearing just a little bit ago where there were no comments. So the proposed ordinance is ready for adoption, and staff does recommend approval.
Council discussion question? Hearing no question, City Clerk, has anyone signed up to provide public comment?
No, sir, no one signed up.
Hearing none, can I have a roll call vote, please?
Mr. Tungle?
Yes.
Ms. Coleman?
Yes.
Ms. Luby?
Yes.
Mr. Nicholson?
Yes.
Ordinance 2024-12 passes 4 yes. Second is the new business. Resolution 2024-41, authorizing the city manager to sign 20-year lease with U.S. Department of Transportation, Federal Aviation Administration for antenna space at Tystack Hill. May I have a motion and a second to adopt Resolution 2024-41?
I make a motion to adopt Resolution 2024-41.
Second.
Motion made by Councilman Nicholson, seconded by Councilman Luby. City Manager to introduce.
Thank you, Mr. Vice Mayor. So this resolution authorizes a 20-year lease for the FAA for their radio receiver on Haystack. They've had this lease since 1999, so quite a number of years. And it's pretty important that they maintain their remote communications outlet. So we are requesting another 20-year lease. The present one expired at the end of September. Staff recommends adoption.
Council discussion. Any comments or question? Council Member Luby.
Yeah, I'm just curious about how is the ratio determined, which determines the rate that we do on leases? And that's more just not really specific to this, but all our leases, I think, right?
Well, we don't have a policy guiding the terms of the leases on Haystack. But we got it appraised with a professional appraiser, and that's what set the rate pursuant to the size that they have. This particular lease is 679 square feet. And so as we renew the leases up there, as they come up for renewal, we apply the new appraisal amount for those leases.
Okay. And I guess because it says it's the equation is the assessed land value times the ratio. And that's where I'm not sure where that ratio comes from.
From the appraisal. There's a calculation that you do on property that you own, and it's based on the lease term, the number of years. So there is a calculation that the appraisers use for the size of the lease and the term.
Okay, great. Now I was just curious where it was, so thanks.
Any other comment or question? City Clerk, has anyone signed up to provide public comment?
No, sir, no one has signed up.
Hearing none, can I have a roll call vote, please?
Yes, Mr. Mayor Pro Tem. Ms. Luby?
Yes.
Mr. Nicholson?
Yes.
Ms. Coleman?
Yes.
Mr. Tungo?
Yes. With a 4-0 vote, Council has adopted Resolution 2024-41. Next is Resolution 2024-42. Approving the Kawalangin Tribe of Analaska to retain expected FY24 community support grant funds. May I have a motion and a second to adopt Resolution 2024-42?
I make a motion to adopt Resolution 2024-42.
Second.
Motion by Councilman Nicholson, seconded by Councilman Luby. City Manager to introduce.
Thank you, Mr. Vice Mayor. So the Q Tribe has a bit more than 31,000 of unspent money from last year's grant, not the current year, last year's. And they want to keep it and use it this year in combination with the amount that they were awarded this year. So the program guidelines and the agreement they signed, excuse me, indicate that any unspent funds need to be returned to the city. And you might recall earlier this year, both the Museum of the Aleutians and USAFE returned unspent FY24 grant funding. MOTA returned $32,716, the museum, and USAFE returned $76,056. But council may choose to allow the Q-Tribe to keep the money to use in the present year. I think you did that once prior with USAFE requested a few years ago to retain $50,000 in unspent grant funding, and I think they used it to buy an emergency generator. So we've got precedent both ways of granting folks who have received grants returning unspent funding. That happens the most. And I know that you have also authorized them to keep unspent funding. So this year, their plan indicates the funding will be used to purchase generators and tent platforms, to hire a camp coordinator, to pay their grants director, and to pay for travel to a conference. And further details in your packet in the memo. And we're not going to make any recommendation on this because, as usual, all of the grant funding, that's the council's decision. So I don't make any recommendation. I do believe there are a couple of people from the Q Tribe on the Zoom meeting. If you want to ask them particular questions, we can unmute them and ask them to respond.
Council discussion. Question. Council Member Luby.
Yeah, I'm glad to hear that they're on the Zoom meeting because I do have some questions for them. And some of the things that they were, first off, I don't have a problem with, you know, just so everybody's clear, if, you know, if the money is being spent good, I don't have a problem with, you know, letting them keep the money towards next year. But I was curious, though, on the grant director, if those, they have an indirect cost, which is also part of their grants. And I'm just wondering, is the grant director not covered under that?
All right, so I'm going to ask the city clerk to unmute both Anthesia and Nadia. You're both unmuted, Ms. Dudikoff and Ms. Thomas. So if you could respond to that question, please, from Council Member Libby.
Hi, thank you guys for having us here today and considering this extension or to use the unexpended funds from last year. We appreciate the time. So I just wanted to, and I think Nadia can help me out with this as well. This is a new position at the Kawalangan Tribe, which was recently hired on so that we have a grants director to oversee all of our grants and so that we're able to make sure that we're meeting the goals and objectives that we have in our grants, but also somebody there to assist us in making sure that we're reporting and spending funds appropriately in correct fashion. Over the years, it's been primarily the managers overseeing the programs that actually, you know, to oversee, you know, the funding amounts. This position, because it's new, and to my knowledge, is not included in the indirect.
Sorry, Anthesia, I was just confirming it's correct.
Okay, and that makes sense. And then I also was wondering, is it the camp director and the coordinator that's going to the conference that you wanted to fund?
Amphasia will be the camp director, and then the coordinator will be hired to support Amphasia throughout the camp.
And so for your travel, those are the ones that are going to go to your to the conference?
It will be probably Amphasia. It won't be me. She's the best person to speak on this, to select the right staff member to participate in that travel. I will be helping with anything that is directly related to the expenses, the reporting, to make sure that all the eligible and allowable costs and allowable expenses are charged to the right funding, and to make sure that we are managing it in an efficient way so that Amphasia and her staff can actually focus on the activities that are on camp.
Mm-hmm. Okay, great. Well, I think it's great that you guys hired somebody to manage the grants. It's a lot of work, so good on you.
Amphasia has been amazing, yes.
Okay, thank you. That's all that was the only questions I had.
Thank you.
Council Member Coleman.
So the new position, was that within the scope of the FY25 grant application?
No, it was not included in the original request for the fiscal year 25. I got hired in August, so it was not included at all.
So there was the comment. Okay, thank you. I'm reluctant to approve this. And here is why. I was looking at the line items here that the money was originally granted for, and it looks like a significant part. There was some with personnel, but it looks like program supplies, food and some other items that weren't really related to what you're used for is now. And there was a comment in the main page about just some unanticipated consequences, and that happens. And we all understand, which is why one of the reasons in the policy, I think, is that you're not able to use that money needs to be returned for that purpose. We have to understand, in my perspective, when we get up here and there's a grant, there's a certain amount of money that we have and are able to allocate. And it's a competitive process. And it's hard because all, including the Q tribe and what is done here at the camp, is important, and we all deem that important, and all groups have important causes, but we have to split that up and allocate those funds as needed. And so when a group has a fund and they don't use it, that has taken away from possibly somebody else that could have used those. So I am, like I said, I'm reluctant to vote in favor of this resolution, just because I hate to continue to go down a road where people aren't making use of the funds that were allocated within that fiscal year. So like it was stated earlier, many times organizations do return that, and I do appreciate that when they do it. So again, I look forward to what you guys are doing. I know there's a significant amount that was granted for this year. I'm sure this being put to good use. And I look forward to your grant proposal for next year. And other than that, I won't have any other questions.
Am I able to respond or comment?
Go ahead.
Thank you. So I just wanted to further explain a little bit on why some of these funds were not expended. This last year, we not only successfully had Camp Unite 2024, but We also implemented 7 additional week-long intensive workshops. And I think about 50% of those were open to the community, in addition to our tribal members, that we have never done before. And with the capacity that we're growing at, it was it was not that we didn't plan out well. I think it was just that we didn't have the capacity and personnel to be able to oversee some of these other programmings that left some of these other items that we needed to do with the funding that we had specifically wanted to use those for to be unexpended. Not an excuse, but also with the amount of programming that we've expanded to, it was just a little bit harder to get done this year. And so I do apologize for that, but I thank you for listening. Thank you.
Thank you. Councilmember Nicholson.
Thank you, Mr. Vice Mayor. I would be in agreement with Councilman Coleman and stuff. It is nice to see that all the other entities and stuff that do get the grants and stuff, that when it isn't used, it does come back to us, and it does make it easier for us to, you know, put forth the monies where, you know, people, you know, for the grants and stuff. So, you know, I'd be with in agreement with Sherry to not be for voting positive on this one. Thank you.
Any other comment? City Clerk, has anyone signed up to provide public comment?
No, sir. No one signed up to make a comment on this item.
Hearing none, can I request a roll call vote, please?
Ms. Luby?
Yes.
Mr. Nicholson?
No.
Mr. Tungle?
No.
Ms. Coleman?
No.
Resolution 2024-42 failed. 3 no's and 1 yes. Next is Resolution 2024-43. Approving the mayor's appointment of Kim Hankins to the Parks, Culture, and Recreation Committee. May I have a motion and a second to adopt Resolution 2024-43?
I make a motion to adopt Resolution 2024-43.
Second.
Motion made by Councilman Nicholson, seconded by Councilman
Coleman.
City Manager to introduce.
Thank you, Mr. Vice Mayor. So there's a vacancy on the PCR committee because one of the members has been hired at PCR as an employee, so he's no longer eligible to serve on the committee. The mayor appointed Kim Hankins to the committee, and that appointment is submitted to council for your approval.
Any discussion or comments on Resolution 2024-43? Hearing none, City Clerk, has anyone signed up to provide public comment?
No, sir, no one signed up.
Can I please have a roll call vote?
Ms. Coleman?
Yes.
Ms. Luby?
Yes.
Mr. Nicholson?
Yes.
Mr. Tungle?
Yes. Resolution 2024-43 passes 4 yes. Next is Ordinance 2024-13, amending the Title 17 of the Unalaska Code of Ordinances. May I have a motion and a second to introduce Ordinance 2024-13 and schedule it for public hearing and second reading on October 22nd, 2024.
I move to introduce Ordinance 2024-13 and schedule it for public hearing October 22nd, 2024.
Second.
Motion made by Councilman Coleman, seconded by Councilman Nicholson. City Manager to introduce.
Thank you, Mr. Vice Mayor. So Ordinance 13 will update the city's building code. Some changes were made back in 2022 to adopt the 2018 Uniform Plumbing Code, the 2020 National Electric Code, and the 2021 International Residential Code. Tonight's ordinance was prepared to align our code with the state code and the most current national building standards. These changes will improve the regulatory framework for construction, alteration, and maintenance of buildings in the city and streamline the plan review process. One of our city attorneys, Cody George, authored the ordinance and worked closely with our staff at Public Works in the creation of the ordinance. Public Works Director Scott Brown and Mr. George are both available if council has any questions.
Questions? Councilmember Coleman?
When was the administrative code changed? Is this kind of recently that the state changed their coding?
Yeah, can you guys hear me?
Yes, we can. Cody, please go ahead.
So it was in late 2022, like October, November timeframe. It was when we were passing when the city was passing the other ordinance and the state published a draft. So we kind of put some of the things on pause, which are now mostly been included in this updated ordinance. There were some other things that, like the plan review, switching to a plan review type process instead of what was deemed a permitting process in the past, that took us a little extra time to kind of work through. So that's kind of the timing of all the ordinances was around that time, and then the state switched and kind of triggered this delay. So this is kind of the second half of what the city council started in 2022.
Okay, thank you.
Any other question? Councilmember Luby.
So on the one thing here, it says that all construction documents submitted with plan review application under any chapter in Title 17, except for Chapter 17.28 International Residential Code, shall be prepared and stamped by a registered design professional in accordance with AS08-48. I'm just curious, so does that mean if somebody wants to design their own place, they have to get it stamped professionally? Residents can't design their own or other businesses?
In the case that somebody was trying to build a home, a residence, we would want engineered stamp design drawings for that. In the case, there's exceptions that we built into this so that we could, if there was a case that merited not doing that, we could do that. You want to put a smoke shack in or a deck or something that isn't going to change the structure in some way, we wouldn't necessarily ask for engineered staff drawings. Commercial, of course, you have no choice. Those all go to fire marshal. That's written. There is an exception in the rule. I just would hate to say that, like any residential, we would not ask for that, because I think it would be prudent for us to ask for that.
Mm-hmm. But
there are some cases that may not fit that.
Okay, and I do ask that because, I built with the shop I did up on Haystack, we ended up actually getting it was engineered for the winds and everything up here and everything. But working through that, now I have a knowledge of what can be done, what should be done, and can't be done. And we made a lot of modifications, to it to meet the standards. But that was a lot of money to do that, but I felt like it was needed up there because of where we're at. But now I have a knowledge, working with the engineer on that, that I feel like I could probably design something with those same, specs, but not pay somebody to stamp it for me. So that's why I ask if that's what that is all about.
So typically, it's a fair question. Typically, during the process, we would review the plans. Of course, if they weren't stamped, we would have big questions. Very seldom do we get a permit and start that process and not go back to the customer and say, we need a bunch of these questions answered. In light of your situation, what you're discussing, if there was some reason you wanted to introduce that and you had a met all the qualifications, everything, it would be a discussion with us engineers and really coming up to make sure that we're meeting all the codes and that the buildings are going to be safe when they're completed. So, you know, without dialing into everything, there will be exceptions to this.
Okay. And
we had those written into the process.
Okay. Cause that's important that you would be able, you know, that you would be able to have an avenue. I mean, I definitely would want to make sure that you're getting your questions answered and things are meeting the, you know, the specs, but if they can be answered without an actual stamp.
We did build that in.
Okay, perfect. And then I had one other question. So it was brought to my attention this afternoon. It was very late. And anyway, but there was a question about the wind loads. And I know this is something that went in there last time we did this. At 165 mile an hour winds. And so what was brought up is that there's something about ultimate and nominal. There's two different scales. Are you aware of that?
I am aware of that. Sorry, I keep forgetting to push the button. I am aware of that. Do I totally understand the difference between the two? I can't say I do. I think that we lean on the side of the worst case scenario. So aside from the, you know, lesser of the two, I think it's written in there. We go with the nominal, I believe. But yeah, there was no changes made to that section other than changing it from, I think, 11 to J.
Mm-hmm.
But those are the same, those loads, nothing changed in there from what the code stated before.
Okay. And so I guess I believe, you know, what the question is that the state uses ultimate, not nominal.
Okay.
Somebody's going to come and give you a call and talk about it with you. So you guys could work that out. But that's something we might need to look at that section to clarify which, if it's nominal or ultimate. And so anyway,
absolutely.
I just wanted to bring that up. And I want you to talk to him because you'll know.
Okay. Between now and the next meeting on the 22nd,
yes. I'm going to encourage him to call you very soon.
Thank you. Cody, do you have anything that you could expand on that?
Cody?
Nothing that I think adds that much value to what you've already said.
Thank you. I'll research that and see. But I think, you know, we would fall on the more excessive winds. I'm doing the opposite now. Let me get back to you on that.
Thank you.
Councilmember Coleman.
Yeah, I'm just going to circle back to the engineer's stamp of approval. It's a really good point. And I think you've answered it, but I just want to reiterate that, you know, we want to promote, we don't want to hinder people from being able to develop their properties, obviously, but we don't have a building inspector. So we want to have them to be assured that, you know, it's not going to be, they're going to be able to do it cost effectively without having to do this. And you said there's exceptions to that, that it doesn't always apply that you have to have an engineer stamp. And you said you have things built in. So I'd love to have you here forever in your seat, but your staff and you will change over. I just want to make sure when you say it's built in that it's actually in policy or not just, hey, in discussion, this is what we generally do, I guess, because, you know, people change and their perspectives change. And that's just kind of like, is this a, you know, when you say you have it worked out, what do you mean?
Cody, can you go to that section where we discuss the ability to, I'm just not sure.
Yeah, it's the bottom of page 1 and the top of page 2, section 17.04.030.
What line is that?
keep going up. Sorry, page one, the bottom of page one.
Of the ordinance or of the memo?
Of the ordinance. Yeah, so this section 17.04.030. So in subsection B, all construction documents submitted with plan review applications under any chapter in this title, except for chapter 17.28, which is the residential code, will be prepared and stamped. And if you go down to the next subsection, subsection C, this, I guess this ordinance design relies on the IRC, because the IRC doesn't inherently require a stamped plan review. So the IRC, just if you go to that separate book that has all the residential codes, that's where it lays out basically that, you know, the building official, which in this case for the city is the public works director, they have the inherent authority to approve plans submitted under the IRC. And so this subsection C lays out the times when a stamp design may be required. So that's kind of, I guess, the default position under the IRC is that you don't need a stamped approval unless one of these three, or kind of three plus conditions exist. So that's A, which is basically someone using an unusual design or a new material. You know, maybe they're testing something out, they develop their own concrete that they want to use in their driveway, or, you know, use as the foundation of their house and not so sure about it because it's not industry standard, or that it's not exempted by this specific state statute or 105.2 of the IRC, which has some other specific types of construction that the state and the International Code Council has said, you know, they're not standard enough that a design professional needs to stamp it, or that number C, which is the nature of the work applied as such that the building official uses their discretion and says, hey, this is something that we're not comfortable approving unless we have someone with a stamp that's willing to sign off on it. So that's how it's built into the code, is the IRC says the default is no stamp is required, but then these are kind of the exceptions that we carved out to say a stamp may be required if one of these conditions apply.
Okay, thank you.
Any other question? Has anyone signed up to provide public comment?
No, sir. No one signed up.
Thank you, Scott. Can I get a roll call vote, please?
Certainly, Mr. Vice Mayor. Ms. Luby?
Yes.
Ms. Coleman?
Yes.
Mr. Nicholson?
Yes.
Mr. Tungle?
Yes. Ordinance 2024-13 passes. With this vote, Council has introduced Ordinance 2024-13 and scheduled it for public hearing and second reading on October 22nd, 2024. Next is the Canvas Committee report. October 1st, 2024, general election and certification of election results. May I have a motion and a second to approve the certification of election results as presented by the Canvas Committee? I need a motion in a second.
I move to certify the results of the October 1st, 2024 general election as presented by the election board and the canvas committee.
Second.
Motion made by Councilmember Luby, seconded by Councilmember Coleman, city manager, to introduce.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor, and I'm just going to turn it over to our city clerk who handled the election. So ask Carla McDown.
Thank you, Ms. Meter. So as you know, we conducted the regular municipal election on October 1st, and the election board has tallied the ballots that were cast that day. The canvas committee met on Friday, October 4th, to tally the remainder of the ballots cast, which consisted of early absentee and question ballots, and to compile that final results. The Canvas Committee report is in your packet, along with the final election results, which is submitted to council for certification. The Canvas Committee and I, your city clerk, recommend certification of the results as presented. And if you have any questions, I'd be happy to answer them for you.
Any question? Hearing none, has anyone signed up to provide public comment?
No, sir, no one signed up.
So, Campus Committee report, October 1st, 2024, general election and certification of election result. Can I get a roll call vote, please?
Mr. Nicholson?
Yes.
Mr. Tungle?
Yes.
Ms. Luby?
Yes.
Ms. Coleman?
Yes.
Vote is 4-0. So with this vote, council has certified the election result as presented. Next is council directive to city manager. If there are any directives, need a motion, a second, and a roll call vote. Hearing none, let's go to the community input and announcement. This is the final opportunity to provide information to council or to make announcement. 3-minute time limit, please. Are there any further announcement? City clerk, were written comments submitted, or does anyone on Zoom or on the phone wish to speak?
No comments were submitted, sir, and no one in Zoom indicated that they wanted to speak.
Next, I need a motion to go into executive session.
I move to adjourn into executive session to discuss personnel and financial matters related to the PSEA negotiations, which, if discussed in public, might negatively impact the interest of the city. Present in executive session will be the Vice Mayor Tungle, Council Members Coleman, Luby, and Nicholson, Acting City Manager Margie Veter, Police Chief Kim Hankins, and Fire Chief Ben Knowles, and City Attorney John Fetcher.
I need the second.
Second.
Motion made by Councilman Luby and seconded by Councilman Coleman. Any objection? Hearing no objection, we are in executive session at 7:43 p.m.